Welcome, listeners, to our review of Scream 3.
Are you listening to me? Huh? Who is this?
Just one question. Do you think it's over, Sydney? Do you?
Scream 3, released in 2000, written by Erin Kruger, directed by Wes Craven. The story continues on while Sydney and her friends visit the Hollywood set of Stab 3, the third film based on the Woodsboro murders. Another Ghostface killer rises to terrorize them. Here we go, starring David Arquette, Neve Campbell, Courtney Cox, Patrick Dempsey, Scott Foley, Lance Hendrickson, Jenny McCarthy, Emily Mortimer, Parker Posey, and Patrick Warburton. What do you think of that cast?
I think it's pretty good. I like seeing Emily Mortimer. Patrick Warburton is funny. Scott Foley's a douche.
Oh, not a Scott Foley fan.
I mean, I was looking, I actually looked up his IMDb after seeing this. I was like, I know him. What do I know him from? I don't know what
Scrubs.
I know him from. Maybe I saw him on Felicity.
Surely Scrubs.
Yeah, that's it. Scrubs. Yeah. But yeah, he's just an ultimate TV actor.
He seems to be doing all right for himself. Music once again by Marco Beltrami. So you may have noticed that this film is a lot less violent than the first two films. Did you pick up on that by any chance?
Not overly, no.
Oh, okay. Because this came out just shortly after the Columbine murders. And they were, you know, having a bit of fear that they really needed to tone down the violence of this film and focus more on the comedy of this film.
Wasn't the Columbine murders surrounded by that controversy of they were watching, you know, violent movies or playing violent games? Like, wasn't that a thing with the Columbine killings?
Yep. So, bad timing for Scream 3. They did have a script ready to go that had, you know, it was quite violent script. It actually centered around Woodsboro again, around the school. And they're like, nah, you can't do any of this now. You got it. Like, we got to change it all. So, they had to rewrite
Holy
the script.
Holy shit, I didn't even make that connection. Yeah, of course. Like, it's all at a school. Jesus.
Yeah. So they settled on Hollywood and, you know, a film within a film, that sort of stuff. Now, all these actors here are starting to get a little big now in their careers. Neve Campbell's contract only allowed her to be on the set for 20 days because she was too busy doing another movie called Drowning Mona, and she was still filming Party of Five at the same time. That's why you don't see so much of her in this film.
Yeah, I did wonder why it took her so long to actually join the rest of the actors in the main storyline. Neve Campbell, I mean, she didn't exactly explode, did she? We've probably talked about this. I guess Party of Five was getting big.
Late 90s, early 2000s is like peak Neve Campbell.
Okay. She certainly has dropped off, although I think she did have some sort of late resurgence, didn't she?
With what? Scream 4?
Nah, I feel like she was on a TV show, like a respected TV show.
You know more about TV shows than I do. I can't remember her from anything else except what we've already spoken about.
Okay, I know what I'm thinking of. She's in 25 episodes of House of Cards.
Okay, haven't seen that.
Yeah, that in my mind, that's what I was thinking. A good TV show that she was in. Yeah, also in Skyscraper, which is a good movie.
Oh, God, I had that out of my mind until you mentioned that. So I think I said on the original Scream breakdown that David Arquette and Courtney Cox may have met on the set of Friends because that episode was done prior to the first Scream. They did. I'm pretty sure. They actually never filmed any scenes together in that episode. So they actually did meet on the set of Scream. They were dating in real life in Scream 2, and they actually got married a month before the principal photographer of this movie began. They actually cut their honeymoon short in order to film this.
Okay. So this would be them in their, you know, their height of lust.
I'd be love now, wouldn't it?
I guess. I don't understand it looking at either of them. Just putting that out there.
You don't see the match?
No, not at all. He is a dweeby, weird-looking guy. And, like, you mentioned her hair last week. And I thought, how bad could it be? Wow.
How did anyone think
that that fringe was a good idea? Like, did she cut that herself?
Oh, man. It's like, yeah, straight across with the scissors.
No, it's not even a straight cut. It's like so jagged. At least in Scream 2, they mention her stupid streaks. They don't even mention it like, yeah, that's normal. People always walk around with that fringe. It's horrendous.
Oh, that's awesome. I'm so glad you picked up on that like immediately. Now, before we continue, we have to address an argument we had on the Scream 2 breakdown about the potential relationship of Gael and Dewey.
Which I don't agree with anymore. I don't think it's fair. Because you've already seen Scream 3 where they openly talk about them having a relationship. It's not fair.
Yeah, but I didn't remember any of that. Obviously, I didn't remember any of that.
Obviously, these people answering the poll have seen Scream 3, know it off by heart, and know that they talk about this relationship that they've already had in between Scream 1 and Scream 2. That does not fly with me that, oh, you put this poll up. I maintain that at the end of Scream 2, you cannot have assumed at all that they've had a relationship, and it works better that they haven't.
Dude, I didn't know anything. I can't remember anything about Scream 3. All I was going off the basis was my knowledge of the first Scream and the second Scream, which we had just watched, okay?
Bullshit.
It's got nothing to do. Don't give me this bullshit. I saw the film like fucking 8 years ago. You think I'm going to remember, you know, the relationship they had after the fact?
Yes, it was ingrained in your mind.
No, and this isn't about fact. I'm telling you, I had no idea about it.
Here we go. The truth comes out, Endo. It's not about fact.
It's not about after the fact. It's about what I want.
Don't try and win an argument with Hendo ever, guys, because it's not about fact.
It's not about after the fact, you twat. Go look at all the polls. Fucking killed you. Come on. That was off the basis of 1 and 2. And it's not like anyone commented saying, yes, they did, because in Scream 3, they had the conversation about that. No one said that.
They didn't have to. They already knew it.
We got one comment here who says it's not really a debate. They pretty much say it during Scream 2 without how they're acting towards each other.
Okay, I'm going to read you the longest reply we had here, okay?
Oh, here we go. Awesome patron, Luke James Human.
Yep, from awesome patron. Absolutely not they had a relationship. It would definitely have been on the cards, but Gail's career was catapulted into the stratosphere while Dewey was undergoing months of surgery and physical rehabilitation. He rejected some initial attempts by Gail to develop their relationship because of his shame and insecurity brought on by dealing with his injuries. Eventually, she gave up and had a number of messy workplace affairs. Thank you, Luke James Hume.
So you're going, oh, messy workplace affairs, because that's what they were talking about in Scream 2.
Sure.
You are terrible. You are so wrong. All right, let's move on from that. So Patrick Dempsey, he was hired the day before shooting began. He had one night to learn 3 big dialogue-heavy scenes.
I mean, with that hair, how could he not?
McDreamy.
Is there anything he can't do? I've written him as McDreamy through all my notes. He is McDreamy.
I have too.
He's fantastic.
So Carrie Fisher makes a little cameo in this film. Do you know who was originally offered the role? Think along the horror lines, you know.
Jamie Lee
horror
Curtis.
Cameo. Very good. There you go. She was offered the role, but she turned it down.
Too busy? That was a joke.
What was this, 2000? Freaky Friday? Would that have been about that time? Oh, no. Freaky Friday was way after that. So the first 2 Scream films were written by Kevin Williamson, but he was unavailable to return to writing it. He did an outline of the film, but in the end, the new writer, Aaron Kruger, basically ignored the entire outline, and his script was mostly written on the fly. There were pages usually completed the day they were about to be filmed. The characters bore so little resemblance to the appearances of their prior films that Wes Craven actually had to do rewrites of that. They were actually rewriting scenes basically the day before the scenes were being shot. And they actually kind of make fun of that in the film. Or I think one of the characters talks about, you know, you keep changing the scenes all the time. How am I supposed to remember my lines? Yada, yada, yada. Legitimately, they had, you know, how they have in this film where they've recreated the first film, like with all the scenes, like the garage and the rooms and all that. Wes Craven had built those without even having a script for why they were in there. He just wanted to make sure that he had these in his film.
That's so weird.
Talking about rewrites here, apparently in a 2009 interview, Matthew Lillard had said that he actually had a contract that would reprise his role as the primary antagonist in this film. Apparently, having survived his death in the original Scream, he was going to orchestrate a new Ghostface attack from prison on high school students and ultimately targeting Sydney. But of course, like we said before, the Columbine massacre took place just before this, so they had to basically clear all that out, and Matthew Lillard was not part of the production in the end.
I mean, thank God for that. Like, just let him die.
Yeah, pretty much. I even saw that, obviously, Jamie Kennedy is in this film on a brief little cameo on a video. They even had considered having him survive the attack and was in hiding, recuperating from his injuries. And they're like, no, we can't. That's a bit too far-fetched.
Yeah. That's too far-fetched.
That's the one.
In this movie, that is too far-fetched. Yeah, sure.
Wes Craven had filmed 3 different endings, and he didn't tell the cast which one it was going to use. The film never had a public test screening. The cast and crew only had their first chance to see the finished product at the premiere because he didn't want any spoilers to be put out on the internet.
I really think he overinflates how much people care about this.
Mate, I'm telling you that these films make a ton of money. It's a big deal in the horror community. But this was released on the 3rd of February in 2000 with a runtime of 116 minutes. Now, Dean, we said the tagline for the first film, someone has taken their love of horror films one step too far. And we said in Scream 2, someone has taken their love of sequels one step too far. What do you think the tagline for this film was?
Someone has taken their love of trilogies too far.
Ooh,
three
incorrect.
Far. Three far.
One step too far.
Ah.
All right. Budget of $40 million and worldwide grossed $162 million.
Wow. I mean, that's awesome. Good for them.
Yep. I did see some other stats here. It did have the record at the time for the most cinemas released at once. Something like 3,500 cinemas around America. I think it was topped by one of the Harry Potter films a little while later.
I mean, that's crazy.
But let's look at some scores here, Dean. What do you reckon, critics or audience?
I think you shocked me last time with the critics liking this more, so I'll go critics.
You are right, but it's not. It's pretty close. Critics have it at 39 and the audience have it at 37.
Wow.
Metacritic have it at 56.
What?
Metacritic always trying to be different.
Bizarre.
Letterboxd have it at 2.7 and IMDb currently have it at 5.6 over 121,000 ratings. So low across the board. But I'm very curious to see if you think it's low for you too. Why don't we get into it, Dean? All right, Liev Schreiber. He's done with pretty quickly here, isn't he?
Oh, wow. We're really going to fly through this, are we? Yeah, he is done with pretty quickly. I thought he was the main character in this film, which was silly considering the opening scenes of the last two films featuring like a character who just dies straight away. So I should have known what was coming. Can I just say, I fucking hate this voice modulator.
Oh my God, is it not the worst thing? Like, this thing doesn't even exist and it's just there as this
normal
plot device.
Like, yeah, I just click this button and it translates exactly into what anyone else sounds like. It is a joke.
It's got three buttons. It's got three buttons and it does every single person's voice. Like, where did you get those voices from? How does it work? It makes absolutely no sense. Can you use it just over the phone? No, you can do it in real life too. You can do it behind a door and it sounds exactly like them. You can do it right in front of them. You can't hear your voice anymore. And it's just there so that the killer can just do whatever he wants and get anyone in any position he wants. It's fucking garbage.
Yeah, and it's garbage and they don't use it well either. Like, every time it's so obvious when it's not, when you can't see the person speaking, it's like, okay, this is clearly the killer and this is bullshit.
Yeah, every single time.
I must say, I did like that when he actually burst through the door and his girlfriend thought, well, he's a killer, and she hits him. I thought that was good. And then obviously Ghostface was behind her. That moment was good. But man, that voice modulator is a nightmare.
Now, surely after all that she's been through, why would Sydney ever want to do a job that requires talking to people on the phone?
I mean, what is she meant to do that she can do in isolation, though? I mean, now's probably a good time to ask this question.
We got a lot of suggestions now.
Was the internet around fully by this time?
Chat rooms.
So probably not. I don't know. Like, she needs to do something. Plus, it sets up. I get what you're saying. Like, this is a stupid job for her, but I didn't mind it. Like, you need to. They obviously want that scene where Ghostface calls her and freaks her out.
I mean, it's not the worst thing in this film.
No, not in the top 10, Hendo.
I think one of the worst things in this film was my next note in big capital letters here. Gale's fucking fringe.
Yeah, we said. It's horrendous. It's so distracting the entire film. I mean, I just don't understand how no one said anything to her.
Yeah, this is good. Good. Makeup person's like, what do you think of this? Wes Craven's like, love it.
It's
fantastic.
Not like that was the style at the time. It's not like, oh, that's so 90s or whenever this movie came out. When did this movie come out?
2000.
Okay. It's not like that was the in thing in 2000. No one was doing this.
It was never an in thing.
Makes no sense.
What did you make of the whole film within a film kind of storyline they were going for here? Where you're on the set of the first film, but which is weird. Like, this is Stab 3, yet they're, filming the stuff from the first Scream?
I don't know.
What happened in the original Stab and Stab 2?
I mean, was Stab 2 in Scream 2?
No, Stab was in Scream 2, and they show
the
Drew Barrymore one.
Yeah, the events of Stab is the first Scream. Surely, like, I know they're doing this big trilogy thing, but surely this would have Stab 2 with the events from Scream 2.
Most likely, but they've set up, like, they're filming stuff at that party.
But I guess the thing is that Stab 3 is running, you know, at the same time as Scream 3, which is why, you know, that bit where they're reading the script from Stab 3 and it's, you know, like it's happening in this movie.
Yeah, but what I'm getting at is why have they got production set up for, like, the stuff that, like, the house party and the garage and all that shit?
I don't know, why is Sydney's mum in this film? It's ridiculous.
Oh, how awful is this stupid plotline of all the ghost mum is haunting? I'm like, oh, fuck, I remember this shit, don't I?
Yeah.
You got more little meta jokes here. They're talking about, you know, Tori Spelling and David Schwimmer isn't there. And what are they saying? Like, the Gale Weathers lookalike is with Brad Pitt. It's like, yeah, righto.
Yeah, I was waiting for a further Friends reference here. They sort of let the ball out of their fingers there. But what are you gonna do?
Do you know what the most out of left field thing to happen in this film is?
That there's a good actress in Emily Mortimer in this film.
That Jay and Silent Bob rock up.
What is that? Like, is this part of the Viewersk universe?
Okay, so what I remember is Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back came out in 2001, I believe, which was also done by Miramax. And there's that whole scene in there where they're at the Miramax studios and they go onto the set of the new Scream film with Shannon Doherty as the main person. So they must have been like this tie-in thing that happened.
It
just doesn't make any sense.
No, it's stupid. And it's not even funny. Like, they're not even given a good joke here to say, like, you know, oh, I think Gail's into me. Or it's like, okay, keep walking.
Yeah, move on.
Ah, oh, and we get Sydney talking to her dad, one of the most boring characters you'll ever see on film. I was like, oh.
He's literally had like two lines in the entire franchise so far.
Yeah.
Like at the very start of the first one.
He's a disaster.
You know who else is awful? Jenny McCarthy.
Awful in what way, Hendo?
Her acting is terrible.
Oh, I didn't notice it. What's her acting? I must have missed that.
No, she's fucking horrible.
Can we talk about this stupid dream sequence, though?
Do we have to?
I mean, you know I hate dream sequences on the best of days. This is... that voice, that like, mother voice that's in her head, but then it turns out that, like, it's also in real life. Like, what the fuck and is it's on going
that, it's
on?
That
on?
It's on that voice thing. It's on that voice thing. Yeah, how did he get the mum's voice?
It makes no sense.
All right, so when do you start putting down your list of suspects?
Not yet. My first... So, and I did consider Dewey, you know.
Of course. You're still waiting for his leg to straighten up.
I'll consider this until, you know, the end of the fifth one. Oh, by the way, is it just me or is his limp wildly inconsistent?
It's David Arquette. His whole career is inconsistent.
Like, by the, like, midway point of this film, or by the end of the film, his limp is like... Like, you can't look at him and just not think limp. But there are scenes at the start of this movie where I didn't even notice it. I was
that bit where Sydney falls off the roof and he comes running in, man, I was in stitches. Yeah, just like, Sydney. It's like, you're not even a cop, mate. Fucking get out of the way. You have literally never helped ever in these films.
But everyone treats him like a hero. Like, what is Sydney doing? She's like, oh, I had to come back because I know I'm safer with you, Dewey. It's like, what?
He's been, like, cut the fuck up, like, both times. the movies end with him being wheeled in the back of an ambulance.
Pretty sure he's terrible.
I love how they're trying to work out, like, the pattern of the killer. And they're like, oh, he's killing them in the order of the movie. I'm like, there's been two people killed. Like, that could easily be a coincidence. They're like, no, this is the pattern. Look out, you're next. Like, come on.
And then of course, once they realize that, right, they're killing in the pattern of this script, oh, there's three different scripts now.
Yeah.
I'm like, what are they doing?
That's the madness of it, because they're like, oh, they were trying to keep the ending off the internet. It's like, come on, you can't. It doesn't make this a better film because you're referencing your own mistakes.
Okay. I think at this point was when I really thought that it was McDreamy When
they really set it up like him.
When McDreamy takes Dewey's phone and then it's not really mentioned again that scene, I was like, okay, that's sus as.
Yeah.
You know, McDreamy sus. But I think the problem is, like, the next time they want you to think that it could be him, it's just so obvious that the movie is, like, pushing down the throat. Like, they reveal not too long after, like, oh, who else had your phone, Dewey? And it's like, oh, McDreamy did. I was like, well, it can't be him then. I was like, it's clearly not him. I thought I was clever in picking up that little thing first, and then they just made such a big point of it. I was like, yeah, okay, it's not that.
But don't you think they could have been doing it like a double fake it? Like what they did with Billy in the first screen where he looks like he's the killer and he gets interrogated and it turns out, yeah, he's not the killer to keep you off the scent.
I mean, I got to admit, when he comes out at the end holding the gun pointed to Sydney, I was like, oh, shit, it is him.
How disappointed you must have been. I tell you, there is, compared to the first two, there is so many noise jump scares.
Oh, there's
you know,
heaps.
Those bloop.
Yep.
Like, it's so ad nauseum. It's so bad.
Yeah. How did Ghostface get Sydney's phone number?
He must have got it. Don't they mention he got it off Dewey? He's on the set.
Did they say Roman he's on the set. Took Dewey's phone?
He must have like okay. got into his phone or something.
I like when they're talking about how you know, tracing calls and stuff. And the cop's just like, a cloned cell phone was used. It's untraceable. Of course.
Yeah, absolutely.
They can just say whatever they want. It doesn't matter. Yeah. Don't think
just
too
like
much
they have,
about
you know,
it.
This magic voice changer. Just they can do whatever they want.
And then they set up this Sydney mother storyline is terrible. And it's like the main push of this film is Sydney's mother. Yeah. This whole...
Well, you got to get that relationship because, you know, you got to find out she has a brother.
This whole, like, 2 years before Sydney's mother met Sydney's father, she was nowhere to be found. Like, this is just... are you serious?
Yeah. Ooh. Patrick Warburton is criminally underused in this film.
Is he?
He is. He's so much better than this. Come on, buddy. Hey, come on. High five.
Yeah, that's his thing. I wasn't angry when he died.
You can tell they've really tried to lean into the ridiculousness of this film. It's like it's weird that Scary Movie came out the same year because this is almost like a parody of itself as well. Like when they're in that house and they're all just standing there and like the lights go out and they all just scream like for no reason. They're like, ah!
That's
like,
it's the like, name of the film, Hendo.
It's ridiculous. What about this fax machine bullshit?
Oh, the fact if there is nothing scarier than a slow internet fax machine, I don't know what it is. Like,
and they're all so terrified. What does it say? Oh my God, what's coming out next? What's going to happen? What?
And it's like printing line by line. I was like, oh, this is terrible. But then what? This one guy goes inside by himself for no reason.
But no, that's it. That's not just the stupidest part. The next part when the thing says he smelt the gas, like he knew he was going to go into a different room and grab that lighter and turn it on. How did no one smell the entire house full of gas?
Yeah, to the point where it just explodes.
Yeah, it's so lazy and dumb. Who approves this shit?
I don't know. Oh, how bad is the editing right after this when Dewey shoots Ghostface at the van and he like falls down and rolls under it? It's so badly put together, this scene. It's not often I watch something and go, wow, the editing sucks, but I did.
You know, the one thing I was focused on was we were talking about the music jump scares and that. This part here where every time Dewey swings his gun around, it goes, whoom, whoom. Like, it's trying to be scary. Like a jump scare's about to happen every time he does it. And I'm like, Dewey, you're not this hero guy. You're not good. Just knock it off. All right, the Randy videotape. I must admit, I did laugh when he's, like, talking to Dewey.
Yeah, like Dewey says something and it's like he knows and responds to it. Yeah, that was okay. I didn't like this whole premise though. This whole thing was ridiculous. It's like, oh well,
the rules of the trilogy.
Yeah, Randy was fun. Let's get real meta here about trilogies. We've got no other character that can say these lines. Let's just act like he knew what would happen. Like, if I'm dead and you make a sequel and then a sequel to that one, make sure you watch this video then. It's like, what?
I'm pretty sure he makes that video during Scream 2.
Oh, this is so stupid. Don't defend it.
No, I'm just saying, like, he does mention that. Apparently the backlash of them killing Randy in the second one, like, people hated it. They're like, why did you kill him? Like, he was the one that was the one who was supposed to dictate the film. Like, he's the one who shouldn't be killed because he understands what's going on. So that's what they did. They got him back in this through this stupid video. All right, what about the Carrie Fisher gag?
Yeah, this wasn't funny.
And like, who did they get? The one who slept with George Lucas. Oh, ha, 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 ha.
Yeah, I didn't like it. I thought she was better than this.
I thought it was, like, ridiculous. The first off, Sydney goes into the bathroom and sees the Emily Mortimer. And then she walks out there. She walks out of the bathroom, turns the corner, and she's on the set. Like, what the hell? They were out in the fucking car park earlier.
That's how Hollywood works, Hendo. I gotta say, Emily Mortimer is terrible in this.
Oh, she's useless. Why is she even there?
Yeah, but she's actively bad in this role. Like,
all of these characters, all these new characters are shit. I can't even tell you any of their names.
Angelina.
Who's that?
Emily Mortimer.
So fake Sydney.
Yes.
Did you think there was two killers again?
Yeah, I did think there were two killers. I was surprised at the end when there wasn't. And actually, the reason I thought there was two killers wasn't even because there was two killers in one or two, and two, even though that did help. It's because the killer's movements did not make sense. He is in multiple scenes where it is only possible for him to be in the places he is in if there are two of him. And I didn't even question, I did not even consider that there was only one killer because it wasn't possible.
See, I remember Scott Foley was the killer. But the fact that, I think it's in this scene where he's chasing Sydney around the fake lot. And I think they go through the window and she runs away. She goes inside and bang, he comes out of the cupboard.
Yeah. Yeah,
the closet, whatever it is.
Exactly. Yeah, right.
And I'm like, oh, so there is two. Yep. And I'm like, but who's the second one? Like, was it Lance Hendrickson? But then there's a scene where those two are talking to each other by themselves in a room. Like, they wouldn't be doing that if they were the two killers.
Yeah, doesn't make sense.
So, super confusing. Pretty lazy. Do you want to just get to the final act here in the house? Did Emily Mortimer do a Batman voice?
I didn't notice it.
When she's in the hallway, like, just before she gets killed, and she, like, turns around and yells at Gale and fake Gale. She's like, I don't even want to do this. Like, it was so Batman. It was like, I don't even want to do this. It was, I'm telling you, it was really bad.
Okay. Almost as bad as
her run.
Oh, what was her run? It was like she was fake running like Carmen Electra in Scary Movie. I don't know what was going on there.
But again, she gets killed, and then Gale and fake Gale, they look down at her, see her dead body, see her getting dragged away, and then they turn and look at each other and synchronize
and scream. Yeah. Yep.
What is this?
Yeah, that was rough. That fake Gale, by the way, is the worst.
So you've definitively labeling her the worst of this film? She is at the bottom?
Yeah, she's my least favorite.
Below the fringe.
Always below the fringe.
You want to talk about how useless Dewey is?
Hold on.
He just gets the shit kicked out of him.
Dewey and Gale find the mask and voice modulator there, right? Then they split up.
Eh.
Why?
Everyone splits up in this film.
What the hell?
It's ridiculous. So when they get into that room, he tries to be a hero and gets, like, it's like they treat it, it's like they're treating him like a piece of shit. He goes to be the hero and gets immediately punched and flies over a bed. He gets up, gets immediately punched again and flies across the room. It's like, they know who this character is, surely.
Yeah, and when Gail's going down the basement, calling out, like, is anyone there? Is anyone there? She finds the fake Roman body. And then Jennifer walks out from behind a curtain. Like, why wouldn't she say anything?
Wait, there's several things that are just as stupid. She sees the dead Roman body. She checks the fucking pulse.
Does she?
Yes. Like, what is that?
Why would you have that in your movie?
Like, I don't understand that.
The people making this film knew he was alive.
Yes.
Like, did they? You said there was constant rewrites. Did they know he was alive?
Surely they would have been like, well, we can't have this scene in here anymore, in the editing room.
Makes no sense.
We talk about basically Officer Doofy. How funny is it when you got fake Gale behind the mirrors trying to bang on them, and he's standing there like, hey, the mirror's moving. So
and they can do something about it. They can hear screaming as well. It's not like there's no sound. Yeah.
Oh, how funny is it when Ghostface throws the knife at Dewey and it hits him right in the head on the handle?
Oh, I was so shocked. I was like, oh, he's actually going to die here. Handle. What are the odds?
Falls down the stairs. This film is a joke. It's an absolute joke. Yeah, what are we up to? Sydney rocks up. McDreamy's there. You want to get to the big reveal?
Yeah.
It's Scott Foley.
Yep.
Now, what's the worst reveal? Is Scott Foley or Timothy Oliphant the worst reveal?
Oh, Timothy Oliphant is worse. He's not even a character. At least Roman is a character.
Jeez. I mean,
what's
I don't think there's much difference.
What's worse? That it's, you know, Loomis's mum hires some random person looking to be a serial killer, or that Sydney has a long-lost brother?
You're talking about the motive behind what they do. I was just talking about the reveal. Like, from watching it at the start of the film to now, I think the character of Mickey was a lot more involved in that majority of that film than this Roman guy who's just, you know, a side person.
Roman had much more screen time than Mickey. You said in yourself in our breakdown of Scream 2.
No.
We hadn't seen him since the cafeteria sing-along.
Yeah, but the stuff before the cafeteria, he was in heaps.
Yeah.
There's a full-on scene with him, with Mickey and Sydney sitting at the police station talking. There's a full discussion between them two. I don't think Sydney and Roman ever meet in this film.
Sydney's barely in this film.
Yeah, they could have a scene with each other together.
Yeah.
Of course, you've got monologue time here. He's got to explain why.
He's got to explain everything, and it's so long. Like, this monologue... Like, firstly, this movie, why the hell is it 2 hours long? This is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. I was so annoyed when I started watching this and saw it went for 1 hour 56. I was like, oh, for fuck's sake. Yeah, and then they have a fight, like a fist fight that somehow Sydney holds her own in. Like, come on. This guy is a killer. Yeah. There's no way she would stand a chance. No, and then that stupid bit where she gets up behind, she stabs him twice, and then has a big, like, one-liner, like, stab three or whatever the fuck she says, and stabs him again.
Awful.
Oh.
You can tell that Kevin Williamson has not written this film. You can tell they went to a new writer. I swear, Dewey and Gale are like the new Dumb and Dumber in this film. What they're doing right now, trying to get to Sydney, is terrible. Did that dumb fuck electrocute himself?
What? Oh, when he shoves the fork in the... Yes. In the oh, not the fork, the tweezers, I think, in the PowerPoint. What the fuck? What was he doing?
It's so awful.
Oh, and then Roman jumps up after he's been stabbed 3 times... Like, mm-hmm. a lot. Like, that's a big knife. And then runs. He's got all that energy.
The whole theme that Randy was talking about, like, in the trilogy, he's superhuman now. You can't kill him. And they use that as the allegory for the bulletproof vest.
Yeah.
Because you shoot him so many times and he keeps coming at you. So, well, plug him in the head. Surely Dewey should have just... No, wait, he wouldn't have thought of that. He's a fucking idiot.
Yeah. Oh, how good was the proposal, though, between Gale and Dewey?
Oh, it's the best proposal I've ever seen. This is, like, the worst couple ever. Yeah, final thoughts. I'm not really big on this film, as you can tell.
Nah, it's not good. I mean, I will say this about the Scream movies, and this one included. They're not boring. They are an entertaining watch. I never was clock watching. I'm not watching it go, fuck, this is boring. It's not boring.
Yeah, okay, I can agree with that.
It's just dumb fun, minus a lot of fun. I give it 2 stars. It's not as, I think you might go lower. I give it kudos for not boring me.
Okay.
And the cast is good. Like, they can't act, but they are people I know that I like to look at for the most part.
Bonus added 1/2 star for having actual actors that I know.
Yes.
When I checked it on Letterboxd, when I logged it on my, you know, big logging way back in the day, I'd put this at 1 star. It's not 1 star. Like, I agree with you. It's never boring. It's just dumb. But it's like, you know, you're laughing throughout this film, but not at the comedy that they're trying to give you. You're laughing at how stupid this movie is in general. It doesn't hold a candle to the first two films. And I'm saying the second film here too, and that, you know, that's not really that good either. I go 1.5 with this film.
Yeah, fair enough. Can't argue with that.
All right. That is it for Scream 3. Now we're up to the final film in this quadrilogy with Scream 4. I think it came out like 12 years later or something like that. Big time gap between these films.
Interesting. Hopefully there's a big quality gap.
Do you want me to give you my initial impression of what I think?
Not at all, but I did see that IMDb has it rated higher.
Okay, well, we'll leave it at that for one more week.
Okay.
So thank you very much, patrons, for checking out this episode, and we will see you next week for Scream 4.
Bye.